Welcome to our latest episode of the TSD Spotlight on Marketing, coming to you from the semi-dried out shores of San Diego, California. I'm your host, Sarah Spiva, Director of Communications for Tech San Diego, and with me in the virtual studio is Alan Bush, VP of Strategy at Ignite Visibility and SEO Professor. Welcome back, Alan.
Hey, thank you for having me. This is great. Like you said, the finally dried out shores of San Diego.
Right, so much rain.
We're not
rain.
Used to getting rain here.
Yeah, we obviously Californians were like, oh, we needed this, but then we're also sick of it after a while. Happy New Year. It's 2023. And we are diving right into that changing landscape of digital marketing with a chat about the top trends that we see for the coming year. And I think the big one for me is, will AI chatbots take our jobs? Alan, do you have a big question about your future?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's so strange. And people, I've heard SEO is dead for since I've been doing it in 16 years. But,
sounds like it's going strong.
Yeah, still going. But yeah, I think that it will impact things, and I'm sure we'll discuss this, but I don't think it's going to replace. So I think there will be certain things that need to change, though. And to counter that, I believe that the big search engines and places like that are trying to predict that and hopefully are working to be able to detect it.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we talk about some of the big trends that we should be watching for this year, let's just talk a little bit about the year, last year, 2022 in review. And I'm going to be looking through the report from Salesforce.com called The State of Marketing, their 8th edition. And just some of the key takeaways for me was that, despite what you and I just said, marketers remain optimistic amid change. And 87% of those marketers say their work provides greater value now than it did a year ago. And I think that's true because there's been an emphasis on authenticity that has required a humanization, a connection, a really company to consumer connection that has really evolved over the last couple of years.
Absolutely. Yeah. Authenticity is a huge thing. And as a marketer, you have to kind of wave the line between I'm trying to promote and sell, but I'm also trying to educate and provide a certain value to people to get them to want to take those actions. So you have to be a combination of like a sociologist, a psychologist, and some kind of a predictor of current events. So there's a lot of hats you have to wear as a marketer. And I believe that it's more valuable if you've had that experience.
Yeah. Yeah. I think one of the biggest things is that there's so much more, there's just a lot more personalization involved in the AI process. And when, you know, we can personalize our messaging a lot more, that's where AI can be helpful. Is that there's a lot more that we can do to make sure that we're connecting with our customers or our clients on a more personal level so that the communication lines continue to stay open. All right. So the second one is that innovative channels and tactics redefine customer engagement, which is kind of what we were just talking about. 83% of marketers say their marketing organizations engage customers in real time across one or more marketing channels. Can you guess? Do you have any guesses about what those marketing channels are most likely?
Social media?
Yeah.
In general, probably. As a whole. Yeah. I would imagine that, like, Instagram, the Yelps of the world, the review sites. And now TikTok is starting to kind of take hold in terms of a marketing channel. Still, I don't think people have cracked the code with TikTok because it's so more personal. You know what I mean? You can't really advertise as much as you could. I mean, you can, but it's not. I don't think people have really nailed that yet. The influencers are there, but
my concern with TikTok is that the algorithm seems to really favor negative content and really pushes the negative content. So anytime people have bad things to say about companies, that floats right to the top of the FYP page. But ultimately, when it's something that's good, it's kind of just, tossed in there. But if there's enough that people can start, chatting in the and getting those comment section going, it's almost always something negative. And I just wish it was the other way around.
Yeah, it's like the accident theory, like traffic always slows down. There's an accident, and news, it's in your feed, likely is probably, I would say 75% of it is bad news or bad press or something. And then once in a while, you see a good news article, you know?
Right. Yeah. Of course. Of course. People like the Good News Daily was so revolutionary because.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. The third is that marketers walk the personalization versus privacy tightrope. So there are a lot of changes to privacy regulations and a lot of calls for data transparency. And as we see the death of third-party cookies on the horizon, 68% of marketers have a fully defined strategy to shift towards first-party data. Yeah, do you know what
I would imagine you can't go with the cookies being, for the technical nerds out there, with cookies being removed, that means that people can't retarget you. And meaning that your ads won't follow people around like they used to as much as they, you know, they'll have to find alternative ways. It's almost like traditional advertising starting to make a resurgence, like the billboards of the world. You know what I mean? I'm not saying you need a billboard, but like think about the internet version of that.
It's kind of like boop, and then you drive by and that's it.
Yeah, you see something and you advertise on certain channels that are really close to where your target demographics are versus, hey, I have a cookie and the ad's following you around no matter where you are. So that's an interesting point because like when I'm as a consumer, when I'm on certain websites, I'm in a different state of mind. You know, I'm like, why is this company advertising on this website? You know, it has nothing to do with what I'm looking at. Being said, is because I visited something previously. So they're like, well, you want to see this? You want to see our? And I'm like, I'm in a different frame of mind at this point. So, that could be helpful. I feel like there is opportunity to really just kind of meet people and intercept where they are rather than just rely on this technology to kind of just follow people around. So perhaps the value will go up, even though the work will go up, the value per ad and the value per client. Should transition into being a higher percentage.
Yeah, that successful click-through rate should be higher.
Yeah.
Of course. The fourth is that KPIs shift as marketers adopt real-time intelligence. One of the many benefits to disruption in the marketing world is that the amount of data that comes in, we're able to really do something with it in real time. So with 72% of high-performing marketers able to analyze marketing performances in real time, that really makes it better to optimize your message. And, hopefully the third-party cookies won't be necessary if you do it right.
yeah, absolutely. And interestingly, Google Analytics always, not always, but they've had a real-time report for a while that was integrated and still is. And then, by the way, people have to switch to Google Analytics 4. So there's a whole different format. And so in July, they're going to sunset the Universal Analytics and go to Google Analytics 4. But these reports, and there's a variety, besides Google Analytics, there's other tools that are out there that, like you said, you can monitor how people are the customer experience. And I do think that UX and UI are going to be a lot closer to or merging more with traditional marketing channels. So people who are studying UX, like I have a lot of students that are also in UX programs. I'm like, you guys are the future because we're going to integrate data analysis into the UX. And then when you make a change, it could be real time seeing how that change impacted the bottom line during that day. So, I feel like it's really going to kind of merge all of our worlds together.
Well, when those workflows are really smooth from point A to point B, it really makes everything much more successful.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the fifth is distributed teams unite with collaboration technology. So recognizing that remote and distributed work is here to stay, obviously, we're starting to use some collaborative technologies. 70% of them expect these investments to be permanent. So some of the collaboration technologies that I'm most familiar with is obviously Teams. And then, the one that I have used independently is Trello and Asana.
Yeah.
Which are also really, really ideal user interfaces and collaboration is really easy on those.
Yeah, absolutely. Those are great tools, actually.
Yeah. Do you have another? Do you have a fourth?
There's probably a few different ones. I would say, in terms of project management, Monday is a good kind of collaboration tool. But that's more for, like, I would say, project management. But for certain projects, I think Trello or Kanban Flow is another one. There's one I was thinking of earlier, but or even things like Zoom or Teams. Like, you can actually get the meetings in real time, record things, and they're adding elements, I've noticed, to these softwares. The ones that we were using for conferences also have built-in tools that you could build things within them. So yeah. Now they're moving into that space, and they started as just a simple communication technology, is becoming now a work project management. And Ignite, for example, we're 150 strong people now, but I was like employee number 7 or something. And years ago, we were only San Diego based, and once in a while, someone would work remotely for a bit. But now we're all remote, and a lot of us are still in San Diego. We come to the office to work with clients, but for the most part, most of us work remotely. And now that allows us to work with people in different cities and even different countries that are employees, mostly the U.S. But that being said, we could potentially hire someone in England, you know? So, you know, it is really interesting to how this is going to evolve and how it changed and how the pandemic really was the catalyst for it.
I think maybe one of the few positive things that came out of the pandemic is forcing the CEOs who are unwilling to sort of imagine a world of remote work, forcing them to really embrace it because they had no other choice, and realizing that there are some benefits on their end as well to having smaller offices
through that. We had a huge office and we had to go smaller, but it saved them money. And yeah. I think the owners were very, not to call them out, but they were very surprised at how well the oiled machine worked. And as much as we miss kind of hanging out and being buds, you know, I do miss my coworkers, but they were like pleasantly surprised. So, this is working pretty well. So we can do a full remote, have a smaller office we come to if you need to get away, or we have client meetings, but for the most part, you work on a different time. And it broke, especially in our business where we're internet marketers,
Yeah.
We're not bartenders or, we don't have, we don't have to necessarily be in person. So it's really, like you said, that's one of the positives that's come out of this, with all the crazy negativeness that has evolved over the last few years. That is a positive spin. And these technologies are just going to fully support these things. They're embracing it and running with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I think the biggest challenge is probably universal adoption across all of the departments, or AKA getting your bosses to put their to-dos into the same buckets as you're trying to, trying to get everybody to follow the same protocols and put all of their to-dos in the same place as well.
Sure.
That's maybe the biggest challenge, but I guess maybe for a smaller company, that is more of a challenge than a bigger one.
Yeah, for sure. And actually, it's funny, the bigger you get, the more it's hard to align everybody, because everyone's doing the thing, even in person or online. I realized that especially when I was the director, it was like hard to get everybody on the same page at the same time. So you have to kind of carve that out and really pay attention to what people's schedules are. And in some cases, like in our case, we take Monday, literally the day Monday, and say, okay, look, we're working on internal things that day. So it's company meetings and your internal processes. Try your best not to deal with client interactions. And then emails and stuff, that's fine, but don't schedule any meetings.
Yeah.
And then we take Tuesday and Friday to go nuts and run with everything, but just catch up with your work and then schedule your meetings from Tuesday to Friday.
Yeah. So Monday I like to put together my agenda for the rest of the week. And usually those emails that I am sending out are filling up my agenda for the week of like what I need to have done by Friday.
Right. Yeah,
exactly. I definitely, and it helps, my boss know what I'm up to so that, he knows that I'm busy. And then I think one of the big things, when the millennial generation was entering the workforce, a lot of us were talking, a lot of the, how to get millennials into the workforce conversations were millennials want to work for companies, and most people do want to work for companies that have company statements or mission statements that align with their own personal values. it's hard to work for a company that you don't necessarily agree with. And so that is the sixth part of this executive summary, is that marketers lead with values. 85% of marketers say their external messaging reflects corporate values. So when your spokespeople are aligned, you know, feel passionately about the company value, it makes it a lot easier to write marketing copy and makes it a lot easier to communicate the company message clearly and effectively, especially when you feel passionate about it yourself.
Yeah, you got to believe in what you're selling, you know. So it's, sometimes it is hard to do, especially if you are working for maybe a product or a service that you don't necessarily are aligned with. But as stated, I think it's really important that, I would say, majority of your time should be spent on working with people's values that you are aligned with and you agree with. And hopefully, a lot of our values are aligned in terms of like the kind of the high level, hey, be a good person, be genuine, be transparent, provide the best customer experience, that type of thing. So it wouldn't be that far-fetched. But then there's very specific values that you're aligned with. I mean, I work for an agency that I've been with for 8 years because my values were aligned with theirs, with the owners. And I appreciate that. You know, not a lot of people could say that, especially in my industry. So, and then we work with clients that are very similar to that. And we're pretty hand chosen, a lot of our clients in that context. So we've actually made a point to avoid certain industries that we've historically found that we're, you know, we weren't aligned with.
It's hard to
be
authentic. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So we have to go, all right, you know, we can't just take everybody. You know, we have to say, hey, you know what? These are the types that we probably should stay clear of, maybe with a few exceptions. But for the most, and that's how the company grew and evolved. And now the work environment for the employees becomes more satisfying because we're not dealing with people that are going to cause us a lot of grief and strife.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So moving forward, here are the things that we're going to see more of in marketing strategies. A lot of companies are starting to dip their toe into that wide giant pool of the metaverse, which is mostly experimental for now, but some of the bigger brands have announced like experiences. And so maybe there's an opportunity there for B2B marketing, but it does seem to mostly be an opportunity for consumer brands. It'll be interesting to see how we can start, you know, I keep imagining the metaverse as the same world as the one in Ready Player One, and it's not the same, but
no, that's a good point. And actually that's kind of how I envision it. Like there's a virtual reality and then there's augmented reality.
Yeah.
And that's that one I don't think people are tapping into enough, because that's, to me, is what we're going with it. Because it's like you wear certain documents and it'll tell you certain things about the thing or whatever that is, and you still see the real world. You're not strapped this thing in your face, this big giant funky device. Where, you know, I'm not saying that's not going to be part of it, and you can go into your own kind of virtual world, and that's always been the case with even like The Sims and that type of thing. Else, video games.
I
mean, this is all, you know, this hasn't been, it's not that new in terms of a technology. It's just that we have evolved in it.
So it's still unclear how this will be advantageous for B2B marketing. Mostly seems to be something for consumer brands to use.
Yeah. If that's usually where people dip their toe in the water first, and then the big B2B spaces will follow suit, because B2C has a little bit more immediate results, meaning that people will purchase things. And whereas B2B mostly, in most cases, are not rash decisions. I need that right away. They have to make decisions, and you're not going to see the results of it until later. Now, people that are early pioneers might have a good example to follow, but you could kind of watch this, especially if you know where your budget is, watch what the B2C people are doing and then see if it works for you. Because, I mean, think about like how Super Bowl ads and those type of things, like, you know, how many B2C versus B2B, and it's probably like Budweiser. You know, like, of course, it's going to own a lot of the space.
Oh, my gosh. Just imagine a metaverse experience for Budweiser where you're hanging out with like the frogs from the 90s, you know, like just hanging out with some of the classic characters from their early ad campaigns.
Yeah.
Like just the Clydesdales are like clopping by.
Yeah. Like the gecko walks by, you know, there's going to be you could rehab that. You know, that's going to happen. They're going to research all that old stuff,
Budweiser,
that nostalgia.
If you want to Budweiser, if you want to talk, I'm available. Exactly. But yeah, so I think I can see how it would be easy for consumer brands to jump into the metaverse a little bit quicker. But I'm looking forward to seeing how B2B can also use it. If it's going to be a thing, you're going to have to experiment with it a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And you may dip your toes in the water, see how it works out. And then, but like I said, if you have insights into a B2C market and you could pay attention to that, again, that's where a lot of where are we going to get these insights?
Right.
That's the point. How do we gain information and knowledge from what other people have done?
I mean, when it comes to B2B marketing, the motto is always, you know, your customers may not be ready to purchase right this second, but you want to be the first person they think of when they are. And so an experience can really do that for a B2B potentially is, you know, oh, remember they have that really cool, you know, virtual lounge or whatever, you know, whatever it is. So it'll be interesting to see how they figure it out.
Yeah.
So moving on to the next is artificial intelligence. Obviously, we'll talk about artificial intelligence a little bit later, but it's definitely making marketing smarter and connecting consumers and business owners to the exact right products and messages. And then customer experience. A lot of algorithms and AI and digital marketing optimize for the same thing, creating a better user experience. So for example, search engine optimization updates this year focused on providing the most helpful content to users. And they want you to, so finding that, you know, sweet spot for the customers with the algorithm and getting that experience for them to be, you know, really easy and fun is going to be coming. And then short videos. You know, a lot of people, we were just talking about TikTok and the power of TikTok and its negativity, but also the Instagram reels, because Instagram really wants to be a competitor with TikTok. Their algorithm is also favoring reels over static photos. So what I have been counseling people on is just making sure that they record 1 minute videos. And while it seems like that's a very big ask, once you get used to it, they get to be a lot easier.
Exactly. You gotta practice.
it's fine. But again, it goes back to that same thing, authenticity. You know, like people want to know who they're working with. They want to know who they're the face behind whatever the brand. And so you benefit from putting your face or your voice at the very least over a graphic or an info, you know, an animated infographic or at the very least.
For sure.
But because that's what's going to get your content pushed to the front of the content line.
Yeah, catches people's attention. Yeah.
Absolutely. So you know, the short videos comes, I think, hand in hand with the next trend that we're going to see is going to be a lot more straightforward and clear messaging, and getting your employees to advocate on behalf of the business. Really also creates a connection between the company and their clients. If customers see that the employees are really happy to work there, people are a lot more likely to click buy or engage with content than if they're, you know, people are beat down and unhappy.
Yeah, that's true. That's definitely true.
And then finally, LinkedIn, it's a growing opportunity for businesses. And I know a lot of people are get salty about LinkedIn. And, you know, there's definitely a lot of content on there that's kind of repetitive and sort of disingenuous. But it's also an opportunity for that employee advocacy that I was talking about earlier. That's where it lives is.
Yeah. I love LinkedIn. I think that's always been my favorite social media platform for a variety of reasons. First of all, I've gotten work from there.
Jobs. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But it also, it was harder to be disingenuous there. because people were more focused on business and growth and making personal connections, funny enough, instead of just showcasing their life. You know, it's a, but as with every platform, it gets saturated with people that are trying to expose it and get, you know, like you said, random articles are about the same thing. And right. Well, this is what everyone's talking about. So let me just repeat and rinse and repeat again. And so every big major platform goes through those phases where you have it, it's great for a little while, it's got a great core group, and then people flood it with a bunch of garbage. I get people trying to add me as because my title all the time. Hey, are you interested in our product and or our service?
It's trying to sell us something. I get those emails all the time trying to sell me something. I'm like, no, we don't have the budget. You know, we're a nonprofit.
Yeah. Some people are like he/she. And I'm like, well, you didn't do your homework to even figure out whether or not I was a human. you got to get that. And I just ignore it and focus on the people that are genuine.
Yeah. There's definitely there's authenticity there that, and I have, you know, made connections on LinkedIn that have been great for, you know, professionally. Yeah. So sure. I guess the really final big question, is AI going to replace us? You know, there's a bunch of tools that are coming out like Phrasy, which is brand language optimization, Jasper, SEM Rush, Seventh Sense, SmartWriter.ai, Optimove. I use Grammarly. Grammarly is one of my favorite free marketing tools. It's an amazing artificial intelligence tool for helping you get your, keep your tone professional. It gives you, it helps with, you know, grammatical and sentence structure changes if necessary. It even acts as a spell check. But I think that's definitely one of the more, I think that one's a really great tool, and the fact that it's free is amazing. But there's, you know, there's a bunch of others. AcroLynx, which is it's a tool that Amazon and Google uses to make sure all their marketing content aligns with their brand. So you can set style, tone, grammar, and even add in company specific wording. And then, you know, Instatext, similar to Grammarly, Smartly.io is an AI-based ad marketing tool that lets teams plan, test, and launch only the best performing ads to their target audience. But I think the biggest one, obviously, is, you know, that pesky robot, ChatGPT.
You know? That's the big talk, right?
Right.
Because of the flexibility of things that it can do.
Right.
And, you know, and I've seen people even trying to build, keyword assignments and that type of thing based around the ChatGPT. Now, it's funny, I actually tried to do that and I wasn't really satisfied with the results. But so, I'm picky, you know, so like, and it, you know, you still have to give it the input. So, whether or not it's the right input, but it's going to get the results are going to come out the way you input them. So as much as it could do a lot of the work, the busy work for you, you still have to put thought and effort, and search engines and people alike are going to get smarter, and they're going to see if you do the same thing over and over again, and they see it over there. It's the same boom that happened when we started doing content spinning and all that stuff that happened back in the 80s or I'm sorry, the 90s. I feel like with the content spinning and all that stuff used to be a big thing where people would just put articles in all different locations and you would just see it saturated the web. This chat thing is going to be more or less the same thing. So you have to be creative on what you give it the input to do and the output. I feel like you can use it to take some of the busy work out. And to be honest with you, I do feel that SEO content writers are going to have a challenge because this is going to remove that
job, that position for sure.
I think content editors will be the new step up. And we have content writers and content editors, and the editors are the ones who give context and throw, you know, certain things away and out and make sure it's clear. But with the writing part, I mean, I could write an article right now in less than a minute and it'd be functional and would make sense. And if I just threw in a couple little quips and anecdotes that I have, I'm done. I don't have to pay somebody now.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So I feel bad because, you know, I know a lot of content writers and being in my industry and, and I'm hoping that it doesn't phase them out, but I feel like
I really hope not.
You know, I just there will be people that'll be bots out there that detect AI generated things, and that they're already working on it. But, you know, in between, there's going to be a lot of less work for the writers.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be interesting. I mean, here's the thing that like, there's a positive and negative to everything. When it comes to companies that are really bootstrapped, don't have a ton of extra money for their tech stack or whatever,
right,
that's where it's a benefit for them, especially mm-hmm. if they need to write like a quick little 250 word something.
Yeah.
500 words something. But it'll be interesting to see what happens to the job market as a result of some of these things coming in.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to see a lot of changes, a lot of evolution, hopefully. And then people will step up their game in terms of how they write, what they write about, and then how they edit.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be an exciting year, and I look forward to seeing what happens. This has been an episode of the Tech San Diego Spotlight on Marketing. Alan Bush, thank you so much for joining me today. It was a great combo.
Absolutely.
If you are interested in learning more about Ignite Visibility, visit ignitevisibility.com. And if you'd like to learn more about Tech San Diego, visit techsandiego.org. And thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.
See you next time.
This episode of TSD Spotlight on Digital Marketing was hosted by Tech San Diego Director of Communications, Sarah Spiva, and Alan Bush, VP of Strategy at Ignite Visibility and SEO Professor. Ignite Visibility is a premier online marketing agency with a mission singularly focused on providing the highest level of customer service in the industry. By establishing mutually beneficial long-term relationships with clients, Ignite creates custom solutions uniquely tailored to meet the specialized business objectives of each client. Ignite Visibility offers earned media, paid media, website development, and design services. Learn more at ignitevisibility.com or give them a call at 619-752-1955. Since 1994, Tech San Diego has provided a unifying voice for San Diego's technology community, fostering growth and business acceleration through collaborations between industry, education, and government. Learn more about us at www.techsandiego.org. Producers for Tech San Diego Spotlight are Kevin Carroll and Sarah Spiva. TSD Spotlight is recorded remotely and edited by Hypable Impact. If you enjoyed this podcast episode, make sure to like, follow, and share.